RA-TV with Cam Edwards.
Moms demand action. Moms demand action. Gun sense is common sense.
That was the scene in Annapolis, Maryland at the state capitol. Good Friday to you. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA-TV. I'm your host, Cam Edwards, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, Maryland already has a lot of gun control laws on the books. As a matter of fact, the Baltimore Sun notes that they've got more laws than most any other state out there. And back in 2013, Maryland passed the Firearm Safety Act. It was signed into law by then-Governor Martin O'Malley. Since then, homicides in Baltimore, Maryland, the state's biggest city, we've got now, I believe, four straight years of 300-plus homicides. You've got to go back to the 1980s, early 1990s, when violent crime was at its apex in the nation to find a violent crime rate that high. As a matter of fact, Baltimore actually set an all-time high in terms of their per capita homicide rate in 2016. So these gun control laws that have been on the books for a few years, all of them aimed, again, at legal law-abiding gun owners, they're not touching the violent criminals. So what's the answer if you're a gun control advocate? More gun control. That's right. And so that's what we saw in Annapolis, Maryland. And listen, don't get me wrong. There were some incredibly painful and personal stories by some of these volunteers and activists with Moms Demand Action. Here's one, as a matter of fact.
This was not a hunting rifle, unless you acknowledge that Jared Ramis was hunting journalists. I lost my husband to a man with three restraining orders and a history of online threats. Both of them were nevertheless able to quickly and legally buy a firearm in Maryland.
That is Andrea Chamblee, who's the widow of John McNamara, who was killed in the Capitol Gazette shooting there in Annapolis, Maryland. And again, it's an incredibly painful story. But the bill that is being offered here, which would require background checks on all transfers of long guns in the state of Maryland, there's already a universal background check requirement for handguns. The Baltimore Sun notes, quote, while none of the proposals correspond directly with the details of how the newspaper shooting suspect got a gun, advocates reference the crime in calling for scrutiny overall as to who can buy guns and how they obtain them. So in other words, this law that they're proposing, had it been on the books, would not have prevented this crime. And you've got lawmakers in Maryland, both Republicans and Democrats, who are concerned that this bill is a vast overreach, again, aimed at the legal law-abiding gun owners in the state of Maryland, not the violent criminals, who continue to wreak havoc on these streets of Baltimore and across the state. We will keep our eyes on those proposals in Annapolis as they continue on with the legislative session. Also keeping our eyes on the 2020 presidential campaign, the disarmament primary over on the Democratic side, it seems. Every day seems to bring a new candidate. Some I haven't even heard of. I think Marianne Williamson is her name. I think she declared in Los Angeles. I think she's a motivational speaker. I don't know. I think we're up to like 212 candidates now. The latest official candidate, Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, who announced today, yes, Cory 2020. This is a portion of his debut campaign video. I got to say, listen, it's very optimistic. It's very upbeat. This is not a video of we're coming to take your guns. It's not. It's a video of we can do better. We can be better. And if you elect me, we will be a better country. But beyond the aspirational messages, we are left with the same tired anti-gun support by Senator Cory Booker, who, as mayor of Newark, never met a gun control proposal that he didn't like. As senator from New Jersey, has never supported real pro-Second Amendment legislation, but has been happy to call for more laws that, again, are aimed at law-abiding gun owners. And I spoke with Dana Lash, I think it was yesterday, actually, on her program, and she made a fantastic point. Now, with all of these candidates running on the left right now, and all of them sort of trying to differentiate themselves from one another, it is entirely possible, and I think quite likely, that we see each one of these candidates try to out-anti-gun one another. It may not happen in every introduction video, but it will happen sooner or later on the campaign trail. So we'll be keeping our eye on Cory Booker and all of the other candidates in the disarmament primary. Howard Schultz, former CEO of Starbucks, he's thinking about avoiding the disarmament primary altogether and running as an independent, but make no mistake, he's still in favor of disarming you and any other American who owns an AR-15 or any other semi-automatic long gun. Here he is on CNBC talking about his support for, it sounds like, not just a gun ban, but gun confiscation. Listen to this.
70% of the American people want the kind of policy and legislation that takes the guns of war out of the American people's neighborhoods.
I'm going back to Calandro. So, again, according to Howard Schultz, people want these guns out of their neighborhoods, right? The guns that are currently in their neighborhoods, guns that are currently legally owned. Americans want them out. So I'd love to hear some specifics from Howard Schultz about how he proposes to accomplish this. Now, it's true. We've seen some local legislation around the country that has demanded, if you currently legally own something, whether it's a rifle or a magazine, you've got to get rid of them. Deerfield, Illinois has that quote-unquote assault weapons ban that's in effect, being challenged in court. In New Jersey, we've got that magazine ban. You've got a magazine over 10 rounds, not allowed to legally possess it anymore. But will we ever hear Howard Schultz get beyond the soundbite solution and actually talk about how he proposes to enforce such a gun law if it gets on the books? I think with Howard Schultz, I think any anti-gun proposal we hear from Cory Booker, a lot of these are going to be very vague and short on details. Long in emotion, right? Message, I care, but not message, I'm proposing effective gun control laws. Let's talk about our friend Anthony Calandro from Gun for Hire in Woodland Park, New Jersey. Anthony, how are you, sir?
Very good, Cam. How's everything on your end?
We are 5x5. I appreciate you coming on the program. And, you know, Woodland Park, it's not too far, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, at least as the crow flies in New Jersey. You start driving there, and all of a sudden you get stuck in traffic, and then it might take you a while. But you've obviously seen Cory Booker as a politician from the time he was a local mayor there in North Jersey to representing the entire state of New Jersey. I'm just going to leave it very open. What has been his record when it comes to respecting and strengthening the right to keep and bear arms?
It's interesting because I started Gun for Hire in Belleville, which is a town that borders Newark. So I'm quite aware of Cory Booker, and he has done nothing but grandstand. You know, I gave him the nickname quite a few years ago. I refer to him as the Closet Cape Crusader because he's all about optics and his Twitter feed and running into burning buildings and delivering diapers to women. But other than taking $100 million from Mark Zuckerberg's foundation and giving it to all of his cronies in Newark, he really hasn't accomplished anything. He's just created this rock star persona. Listen, the guy is great at raising money, so he kind of scares me that he's running. He's in bed with Big Pharma. He never met a gun control law that he disliked. He likes them all, but he likes his armed security detail. At his peak, when he was the mayor of Newark, he had a security detail of 8 armed Newark police officers that were in 3 Chevy Suburbans that were with him 24/7. This is the hypocrisy that we deal with from these rich socialists. And he is not from Newark. He is from Harrington Park, New Jersey, in Bergen County, where the average house is about $800,000 and the average property taxes a year is about $40,000. So he's completely out of touch. He's just playing the race card. He's playing the against Trump card to his advantage. I mean, The guy is despicable.
Talking to you with Anthony Calandro from the Gunfire Range in Woodland Park, New Jersey. And you know, you talk about the lack of support for any recognition of the right to keep and bear arms while he was either mayor of New Jersey or mayor of Newark or a senator from New Jersey. But not only that, not only has he not lifted a finger to help gun owners across the state, I mean, he's actively supported basically any gun control effort that's come along, whether it is a statewide effort there in New Jersey or federal legislation as well.
Correct. He is totally anti-gun. And it's amazing because when he was the mayor of Newark, the murder rate was the highest it had ever been the last 6 years that he was the mayor of Newark. Again, it's just about disarming the law-abiding citizens, does nothing for the criminals. I mean, he panders to the extreme left. And, you know, a lot of things worry me about this guy. Like today, Senator Bob Menendez came out and endorsed him 100%. This is another scoundrel that shouldn't be in office. That's, you know, that's been part of so many crimes. Obviously, it ended up in a hung trial with him. But, you know, this is two birds of a feather here. These guys are in it for personal gain. It almost seems to me like since Cory Booker entered politics, he's been doing nothing but running for the presidency. And now here he is running for it. It's going to hurt Kamala Harris, and it's going to hurt a few of the other people there because, again, the tech companies and everybody really like him. He's the golden boy of the left right now, and he has political experience by being a U.S. senator. So, but as soon as he gets in, the gun grabs will start. Right, he supports every gun bill that's come across in New Jersey at the state level, and he's supported every gun control measure at the federal level. So he's definitely not our friend.
Anthony Calandro, listen, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. It is good talking with you, and I know we'll be doing this again very soon. Let me give you a couple of quotes from Cory Booker here. This is from his message to Congress. He was a mayor of Newark at the time. This is 2011. He said, quote, "We know we have a gun violence problem in America. The solution is not to get rid of guns, because remember, we're common sense. We love the Second Amendment. The solution is to have sensible gun laws that keep illegal weapons out of the hands of criminals, but also empower communities to make smart choices about how to best protect their neighborhoods, their towns, their cities. Right now," he said back in 2011, "moving through our federal legislature is this insane idea that says people can carry hidden loaded weapons, concealed weapons, all throughout the country, regardless of individual state laws." They're basically saying that if in Florida or Utah they make a decision to issue a concealed weapon permit, that permit should apply to every other state. Some states, he says, may have lax laws. They may allow people that have had, you know, issues that we wouldn't allow here. So, no, this is crazy. Your idea that the right to bear arms is a real right? Yeah, that's great. Oh, he loves the Second Amendment, supports the Second Amendment. Can't get rid of all the guns, but shouldn't actually allow people to carry them. So if you are Shanine Allen, let's say, a resident of Pennsylvania, and you drive across a bridge into New Jersey, and you've got your legally owned and legally carried firearm with you, at least legally carried in Pennsylvania, but you get pulled over for a traffic stop, they find that gun there. Cory Booker apparently thinks that you, as a mom who, you know, made a mistake, should be facing 5 years in prison because that's the law in New Jersey. I don't know about you. That doesn't sound commonsensical to me at all. That sounds like a violation of our right to keep and bear arms. Now, speaking of commonsensical, to me, is a common sense idea that you want to have your kids protected while they're at school. And our governor in Virginia, where we're coming to you from Farmville today, Ralph Northam, he's got some issues going on right now. Apparently, a yearbook photo surfaced, and we're not sure if it was Ralph Northam in blackface or Ralph Northam in the Klan hood, but it was in his yearbook photo. But Ralph Northam, before this latest scandal erupted a couple of months ago, a school district in far southwestern Virginia, Lee County, Virginia, they wanted to have armed school staff. They wanted to get volunteers. They wanted to vet them. They wanted to train them because they don't have the money for school resource officers. And our governor in Virginia, Ralph Northam, and our attorney general in Virginia both said, no, can't do it. The only way that you're allowed to protect those kids is by coming up with money that you don't have to hire school resource officers that you can't pay. That's it. Now, around the country, we have seen thousands of educators and hundreds of school districts actually do what Lee County Schools wanted to do. They found those volunteers. They've trained them. They've vetted them. And they're actually in schools today protecting kids right now. Over across the pond in England, Channel 4 got wind of this and decided to do a quote-unquote documentary all about the armed teacher debate. Quote, "Training Teachers to Kill." That's the name of this documentary. And they spent quite a bit of time, actually, with the FASTER program out in Ohio, which is a program run by the Buckeye Firearms Foundation that has educated thousands of educators over the last few years. I want to welcome from Buckeye Firearms, NRA board member Sean Maloney is with us. Sean, how are you, sir?
Good evening, Cam. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
You know, I'm good. And I remember this crew coming out to you guys several months ago. And I remember even, I think you and I even had a conversation about, you know, is this going to go okay? And it sounded like this crew had really presented themselves as, we want to be fair. We want to be unbiased. We want to just really get to understand what's going on here. And it sounds like that's not what the finished product is at all.
No, and I agree with you. I spent dozens and dozens of hours with these folks. We all did here in good faith, and including my county sheriff, Richard K. Jones. Opened the doors, And when I first started and they first started interviewing me and shadowing me for a while, I asked one thing. I asked them to keep an open mind. I understand you're from England. This is all foreign to you. You don't quite have an understanding of this, but do me a favor and keep an open mind and move forward and then make a good faith assessment. The last time they were at my house, the producer told me that she had an open mind and didn't disagree with any or didn't agree with anything we were doing. So at that point in time, the last time I saw her, I knew that she didn't agree, but I didn't know that they would attack us the way they were doing right now. And I can only imagine what's going to come out. And in fact, today, after they called me, Becky, who was one of the co-producers, called me to tell me that their documentary will be out on Channel 4 on Monday. She also told me, you know, that she enjoyed herself and acted like there was no problems. And this is before, of course, I saw what the headlines were going to be. So, you know, we in good faith, we wanted to get the word out. We wanted to educate the world as to what we're doing and the best way to protect your children when the money matters, when the money's not there and our kids still need protected. And so with Buckeye Farms in good faith, we open our homes, we open our training centers, and we gave them access to everything. Guardedly so, because, you know, we tried to educate them at the same point in time, but unfortunately, it doesn't look like things worked out.
You know, and I will confess, I have not seen the finished product here. I've been reading stories about it and how the media is presented, as you say. My hope is that those producers who were there on the ground actually did get it and were honest with you, and maybe the finished product is not going to be quite as hyperbolic as the headlines. We do live in a day and age of clickbait, and so I'm hoping. Got my fingers crossed. I don't know how optimistic I am, but I am hoping that the finished product is going to better reflect the reality of what happens during one of these training programs than the media coverage that we've seen to date. But if it's not, if it's just as bad as we suspect it might be, Sean, what do you want people to know? What was your desire when you said, yes, come in and let's show what we do here? What is it that people don't understand about programs like FASTR that you hoped that they would understand after having watched this?
That teachers, administrators, school bus drivers, janitors, no matter who they are, whoever desire to protect their children and who will die for these same children with or without a firearm can be properly trained and vetted and given the opportunity to carry firearms within the school safety zone and protect our kids. Let's face it. We already know that unarmed staff protecting our children don't work. You can look at Parkland, you can look at Columbine, you can look at Virginia Tech. People sacrifice their bodies to protect kids, and the kids die just the same. And the only way truly to protect our children in a situation like that is with a firearm. So we are trying to educate the people, the producers, and really America still, it's an ongoing educational process that, hey, these people don't have to be police officers. They don't have to know how to handcuff somebody, but you know what they have to do? They have to be willing to essentially put their body between bullets and their kids, and at the same time have the ability to respond in kind and stop the killing. Hopefully, before it starts, or secondarily with the least amount of carnage to our innocent children as could possibly take place.
You know, and I also want people to understand, too, that I don't think anybody is suggesting that this is, if you do this, it's all good. We're all good. That's all you need to do. Right. As you point out, the goal is to stop any violence before it actually occurs. Right. So this does not ignore reporting mechanisms. This does not ignore perhaps the availability of mental health counselors. This is the response to one specific aspect of this problem. What happens when somebody gains access to the school with the intent to hurt as many of those kids as possible? That's what this is designed to actually address, and only that situation.
Absolutely. It's a layered approach. One thing won't work, but when mental health doesn't work, when locks on doors don't work, when fire alarms are pulled, when something happens and everything else that's in place to prevent this tragedy doesn't work and the shooting starts, what's next? We know what happens when armed staff isn't there to stop it when it starts. But now this is another layer, another approach. When the worst is happening, how do we save our kids? And that's essentially what this is all about. There's so many other things that go into place. Mental health counseling, police investigation, school resource officers. Even in schools with school resource officers, these big high schools, you know, you still need help. You still need the availability of first responders that are also teachers, that are also janitors, whoever they are. But again, Cam, you said it perfectly. It's a layered approach. When all else fails, what's there? What's the stopgap? What is going to save as many lives as we possibly can save? And this is it. And it's common sense. They're trained. They have desire to do well and to do good. And they'll give up their lives for our children, not their own kids, but somebody else's, our kids. And when you have that type of dedication and loyalty to the cause in place, only good things can happen.
John Maloney, again, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. And I'll make the announcement right here. I will be the keynote speaker at the Buckeye Firearms Bash. I believe it is April the 6th in Columbus, Ohio. We just kind of finalized this, I think, earlier today. So This is the official announcement. I don't even know if you guys announced it. Sorry if I'm jumping the gun here. But I will see you in Columbus in just a couple of months.
Cam, we're so happy to have you. And if you didn't do it, I was going to make the announcement. And so if you live in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Michigan, Kentucky, Indiana, or certainly Ohio, come and see Cam Edwards April 6th, Villa Milano Center in Columbus, Ohio. And it's great to have you back there. I think it's been 8 or 9 or 10 years. And so we can't wait to see you. Ticket sales are gonna go crazy when they find out you're going to be there.
Well, listen, I'm excited. You're right. It has been a few years. I remember the last time I was there, I drove over and stopped off at the Bob Evans Homestead on the way to Columbus. I might just have to do that again. It's a fantastic drive from Central Virginia, even closer from all those states that Sean just mentioned. Sean, thank you as always, sir. It is so good talking to you, and I will see you in April there in Columbus. Now, one more story here before we get to our hero of the day, our deal of the day, and our good guy. In New Hampshire, we've been talking about this rule change in the House, the actual House chamber, which is now controlled by Democrats, and they've decided no more shall lawmakers legally and lawfully carry firearms there in the House chamber, which they've been doing for years. Now there's a group of GOP lawmakers there in New Hampshire who are talking about not just fighting back, but fighting back in court. I believe we've got one of the attorneys, Dan Hines, talking about what might come next here.
We hope it doesn't get that far. There are brave reps who will continue to carry because their life is more important to them than being expelled.
I think the court was very specific in the Heller decision that certain places have the right to keep firearms out, and I believe the House chamber is one of those places.
All right, so who knows? Maybe another case that might wind its way up to the Supreme Court here. It might take several years for it to get there, but we'll keep our eyes on that story in the meantime. Today's hero of the day from KIRO in Washington State, Sikkim, Washington. KIRO reports that homeowners there held a suspect at gunpoint during a recent burglary attempt. Thankfully, they were able to hold that suspect in place until deputies arrived and arrested him. This was Tuesday, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Deputies called to a burglary. During the response, dispatch told them that the homeowners had arrived at the property and were holding the suspect at gunpoint. Homeowners told police that there was an alarm the day prior. They found a window in one of the shops broken. One of the homeowners was armed with a pistol when they responded to the alarm on Tuesday and found the suspect on the property next to one of the shops standing with a pull cart. Suspect, 38-year-old Shane Lowe. Deputies say that when Lowe saw the homeowners, he ran towards his car, which was parked a short distance away on Highway 101. Sheriff's office said that one of the homeowners fired his pistol into the ground, telling Lowe to stop. Lowe stopped, and the homeowners were able to detain him at gunpoint until deputies arrived. Deputies said the investigation revealed that the items in the pull cart taken by Lowe had been stolen from two different shops there on the property. Lowe's been arrested, booked into jail on suspicion of second-degree burglary and attempted theft in the second degree as well. Our deal of the day, also from Washington State, Seattle, Washington, where an individual has been convicted. Well, before I tell you how many times he's been convicted, let's talk about this. Well, there you go. You decide. 72 convictions, 14 assaults, 14 felonies for this individual there in Seattle, Washington, who is still getting these light sentences. His name is Francisco Calderon. And he has, over the last, I guess, a few years, racked up 72 different convictions, 14 assault convictions. He's been under the supervision of the State Department of Corrections 14 separate times. Yeah. And then the most recent case, he just walked up to a stranger and then punched him. Mm-hmm. And then the sentencing recommendation for this latest assault was a plea deal, which would have required Calderon to get a mental health evaluation, enroll in substance abuse treatment, and agree to 2 years probation. He would then be put back out onto the street with credit for time served, which at the time of the sentencing was 50 days in jail. Case was brought before a Seattle judge on December the 10th. Judge actually questioned the assistant city attorney about the plea deal, saying, this guy's got a really long history. And the city attorney then stood by the deal. Here's what the city attorney had to say to KOMO.
This gentleman's lengthy criminal history is the very result of short-sighted imposition of judgment, of punishment, and then we're shocked to know that he's continuing to repeat.
So, sounds like kind of passing the buck along there. And listen, I'm sure there's no shortage of individuals to blame. This is why we cover these stories each and every day, because this is a systemic issue within the entire criminal justice system. And when you have these systemic issues where violent criminals are getting put back onto the street after their 14th assault, and you also have politicians who seem way more interested in passing unenforceable laws that are aimed at you and me, and if they're not unenforceable, they're unconstitutional, that seems to be a big problem to me. And I think it's a big problem for you, and I think it's a big problem for anybody else who really cares about public safety, as well as our constitutional rights. So there you go, Mr. Francisco Calderon. Today's deal of the day. Our good guy of the day brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher from the tiny town of Polson, Montana, which might even be smaller than Farmville, Virginia. I got to go back and check after we get off the air here. Off-duty officer Aaron Sutton came to the aid of a child at the Quatucknook Resort and Casino in Polson. He was off duty a couple of Saturdays ago. He said, we walked into the downstairs door and I could hear a woman screaming. He said, I didn't know what was going on, but we were alert at that point. Woman came out of the pool there saying that her child had just drowned. Sutton says she's crying and hysterical. A few other people who are just running around. And that is when Sutton leapt into action. Listen to what Officer Sutter had to say.
As soon as he walked in the downstairs doors, I heard this woman screaming and kind of really didn't know what was going on. You know, we were just alert at that point. She's crying and hysterical, and there's a few other people that are kind of running around. I roll him over and, you know, kind of push up into his abdomen, like the Heimlich maneuver, you know, and I started pounding on his back. It's scary for a family, you know, be in that scenario to possibly lose a child. I was just at the right place at the right time. Any one of my brothers or sisters would do the same thing, you know, any off-duty police officer or hopefully any citizen that, you know, knew CPR. I go around town and people shake my hand and call me the hero cop, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of embarrassing, I guess. I don't consider myself a hero. You know, I was just there and did something.
Well, in the right place at the right time, but willing and able to do the right thing is what makes Officer Sutton today's good guy. And we thank you, sir, for being one of the many, many good guys out there. Thank you so much for being a part of this edition of Cam and Company here on NRA TV. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday.